This is the Personnel Committee meeting, July 10th, 2025, originally scheduled at 8:30, and my apologies for my confusion around the timing. So we're going to start now at 9 o'clock. Call to order. We're all here. Comments to the public? Nobody's here. And so the first discussion item is HR and payroll department direction. And John Merchant is joining us on the payroll committee.
On the personnel committee.
Too many P's. Sorry about that.
So if it's okay, I'll go ahead and start with the human resource services. At the May board meeting, the board gave direction to staff to work with Patrick and his office to review our personnel documents, policies, procedures. And I spoke with Patrick, and we had a conversation and realized that this was best if and most cost-effective for the district if we sent it to a firm that just dealt in payroll, right? Like, I like to let the tire guy change my tires, the brake guy work on my brakes. So let the HR company do what they do best. I went out and solicited bids from three different companies. The first two companies here, HR.
Before we got into that, I just wanted to make some comments about...
Awesome.
Okay. The direction that we are trying to look at, in the past 2 years, we've had approximately 2 years. The district has employed two part-time people, both responsible for payroll and HR. That's correct?
Yes.
With the recognition that the district needs the dedicated expertise of HR professionals, the committee is proposing the following. What I've listed here is not necessarily, we're going to have discussion first. So one full-time payroll position within the financial department. And then the second thing was the hiring of professional HR agency to provide dedicated HR services designed specifically for the district's needs. And Amelia, who started before I got a chance to say this, Amelia will be vetting these three agencies, and she's got comments to make. Take it away, Amelia.
So we need help in onboarding, offboarding, discipline, training managers, and proper discipline and documentation. And then hopefully not termination, but any
HR.
Yeah, and everything that has to do with HR.
Yes, we do.
So I got three quotes, Sierra HR and CPS Consulting. Even though I told them exactly what we needed, they both came back and said, great. And for $100 an hour for this level, $150 an hour for this level of employee, we'll work on these documents. So that was so open-ended, it felt like we would be, you know, paying $1,500 for them to,
do stuff we didn't need. Yeah.
Well, and it was just open-ended. How long is it going to take you to rewrite our personnel manual? I don't know, about that long. So the quote that really fit our needs best was HR to go. They have a menu of items that they'll take care of us at two different dollar amounts. The first one is kind of entry level. It'll rewrite our personnel manual. My favorite thing that they said, because right now we have the HR personnel manual and we have a bunch of policies that relate to HR, smoking, dress code, driving, seatbelts, but they're all on the periphery. And the first thing they're going to do is take all of those documents along with our HR manual and combine them all together so that when the employee signs that they've read, understood, and received the manual, the HR manual, they're also receiving all of those policies and procedures that we have in place. And so for about $2,000 a month, they will update our policy manual, our handbook, policies and procedures, teach us what it is and how to use it, look at all of our documents, make sure that they're compliant, provide coaching on dealing with employee discipline, update our hiring and termination packets, review our wage and hour practices for compliance, They have experience with unions, non-unions, and companies like ours that work with both. We have, for 1 year, it's a one-year term, unlimited access Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 to an HR consultant. So if we have questions that come up during the day, we can call and talk to somebody.
I just wanted to clarify something. This is an agency or a group that we're going to hire not as employees of the district, but as
Consulting firm.
A consulting firm, right. Okay,
exactly.
I just wanted to clarify that because we need to.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks.
They're going to assist our management team on employee performances, discipline, and other HR issues as they arrive, providing coaching to managers and staff to improve performance in HR and morale. And then for terminations, they will, this is my favorite line, analyze and evaluate employee terminations, voluntary and involuntary, with an eye toward legal litigation prevention, and provide consultation and guidance. Then they will rewrite our IIPP, the Injury and Illness Prevention Plan, which I hope they'll find is pretty up-to-date because I do that annually. We have unlimited safety and OSHA advisory support. We'll get a safety newsletter and a workplace violence prevention plan review for compliance. That is $1,910 a month. And then option two includes all the things above, and they also will give us a pay transparency review and guidance, including a salary survey, which is something that we've been talking about for the non-represented staff for years. So that's included in the price of option two. They'll organize and assemble our personnel files and make sure that they're properly managed. They oversee harassment claims against the and assist with investigations. They develop procedures, documents, and administer employee leaves based on state laws, including pregnancy, disability leave, FMLA, workers' comp, and ADA. So again, another thing that we need to bolster up in our HR department. They'll give us quarterly training with our managers, which is a one-on-one. It's with a video call, but it's a live person who'll be training our managers on discipline and how to properly document that and how to manage the employees when they're having something that needs growth and correction. Then we have a seat every month, unlimited seats every month. They have like a potpourri of HR topics. So if the managers needed something, whatever, we could A, talk about it in our quarterly meeting, B, talk about it every single day with them, or C, get onto one of their webinars that is on that topic. Facilitate and participate in virtual employee counseling and termination meetings, new hire onboarding assistance, and collaboration. Background checks. Provide quarterly online, we talked about that. Conduct scheduled virtual check-in meetings to discuss HR progress and priorities on a bi-weekly basis. So now we have real professionals supporting us in HR. My recommendation, the cost for this one is $3,350 a month. Additionally, they will update our pay for performance manual in option number two. $3,300 a month. My recommendation is to go with the bigger plan for a year, and then we'll really be rolling and have the knowledge that we need to go on the smaller plan.
So I might want to add something. Last week when Donna left, I had a chance to really sit down with Hazel on a very different topic. It turned out we do have an employee handbook, but they never use it.
Right.
It was never distributed to any employee to sign.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, we also have an HR menu. But in this quote here, it only mentions updating employee handbook, which are two different handbooks.
Mm-hmm.
The HR manual should be very inclusive of all laws and regulations, and employee handbook should be just what the employee needs to know. And during audits, both documents are submitted for review for the audits as well, for financial audits, because a lot of the calculations, a lot of how payroll should be paid, it comes from the two different menus. So
So, excuse me, one second. So, we have the HR manual. What was the other one?
Employee handbook.
Employee handbook.
So, when someone is onboarded, there's a book that the employee should read and sign that has never been done. And just to give you a little bit of, I was working with our front desk person to have proper mileage reimbursement. That person had been reimbursed $3 per trip, and I said, I've never heard of it in any organization to do $3. And, you know, then payroll person said, I don't know it's been done like that. And I said, you have to have a policy. So I dig through HR menu, and you have a policy online from 2019 that specifically spelled out your travel reimbursement should be paid based on IRS rate. So I said, here you go, you don't know that. And so, so you have a lot of things in somewhere, but has never been given to the employee. They don't even know what their rights are. So,
okay, so that just started post Tanya being here. So say 2021, 2020-ish, because when I started in 2019, 2020, I was given the HR manual and all of the policies that I had to sign. For quite a while, when she transferred over to paychecks, because she had just been doing it all manually and then scanning it in, right, and keeping it in everybody's file, that was all uploaded into their paychecks file. So, like, I can go into my file on paychecks and see all the documents that I signed originally when I was onboarded. And when I gave that over to HR payroll, I said, you know, everybody needs to get this. I explained that, and I even had a checklist of onboarding documents they needed. Because after Tanya left, I onboarded people for a while, because I've done it previously.
Yeah. Here's when my daughter was home, 4th of July, I went through a lot of this stuff with her. All of these companies that she's worked in or is familiar with onboard twice a month.
Yeah, that's what we do.
You don't start today. Hey, or you don't start next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. You start on the second Wednesday or the fourth Wednesday or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of it coordinates
with payroll, with payroll processing, yeah.
And at that meeting, in companies of larger size, you have the HR person who is responsible for onboarding. If it's big enough, they have one that's responsible for offboarding, and there are a lot of critical things that happen in both situations.
Yeah.
But everything related to bringing that new employee in-house is done at that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that relates to payroll, the W-2s, W-4s, everything.
Yeah, all the I-9s, everything.
And we had the discussion too, the two entities, other than communicating after this is done, don't cross over with us. And by the two entities, I mean payroll and HR. Okay, payroll is payroll, and payroll is a financial responsibility, and payroll reports to finance. So what they do at these meetings, and you can do this, you know, with after we've refined everything that goes in here and we've modified the policies and we have updated job description, the person's going to get their job description, they're going to get the employee handbook, they're going to get all the related documents that they sign and acknowledge that they've received.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't vary from employee to employee. Everybody gets the same thing. If you're coming in to be the president or you're coming in to be the janitor, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of agreed with you when I went through these. First of all, starting back with Patrick, you know, if we had Patrick or the folks that we worked with in the last settlement agreement doing this stuff, I mean, you got people reviewing documents that are getting $285 to $375 an hour.
Right, right.
Okay, we don't need that. I'm kind of very much in favor of going this route, and what I would suggest, and I will suggest next week, is that you administer this contract.
Thank you.
And there have to be triggers in there For example, if we meet with a harassment complaint, okay, that has to be a trigger that in if there's a general manager sitting here, that is immediately passed to the general manager. Okay, then we decide what we're going to do with it, and that is a consultation with personnel. I mean, but for the day-to-day personnel things that we do, that they're going to do for us, we need one person in the house to administer that. And my recommendation would be that you do it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So...
But when you said day-to-day, what are you referring to?
In other words, if, for example, we want to coordinate with personnel because we're establishing a new position or we're writing a new job description, mm-hmm. or we've had a meeting and we've decided we're going to amend a job description, we're going to give somebody additional or different responsibilities, we would want for consistency that to go back to the same people that are writing all of our other job descriptions and get a final document from them.
Yeah.
And there has to be one, we can't have 14 people calling HR. We need one, 14 people can tell us they need something from HR, but only one person
filters it.
Needs to communicate with that. And it's no different than what we're talking about with documents and everything else. We need a central point for all this stuff to be recognized, filed, and then given
dispersed
to the appropriate people.
So, in other words, if I want to hire a person, I go to Amelia and say, I want to hire this person, I need job description written, mm-hmm. and I need a pay scale to find out how much should be paid,
mm-hmm.
and then you will call HR to go and go, I need these.
Yes.
And then she will make sure that they're doing it.
Yeah. You know, and I don't see them being involved in the interviewing process, but I do see them in the beginning being involved in how we structure that hiring process.
Right.
So that we hire everybody the same way.
Exactly. So the orientation and onboarding are all exactly the same.
And we ask in that screening process before we get to the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're ticking off the boxes that relate to their qualifications or experience or however we're going to do that. The other thing that happens, you know, and it's a step up in some respects to a larger place, but I don't think necessarily so, is that when you onboard, they do it. If their personnel, and one of the reasons they do it on specific days is also so that, you know, we're not doing this 7 days a week.
Right.
Where you're doing the onboarding and you might have, even if it's one or two people that are here and you're doing it on a screen, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
There's you and there's the HR person, and the HR person conducts the interview, and you answer the questions. But they are always present in the onboarding. HR is always present in a termination.
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that we leave that termination specifically to them, but there's two
they
people.
They guide us through the process.
There's two people in the room.
Well, I think even before we actually terminate that somebody, the manager should be already 3 or 4 months ahead working with HR to go and say, mm-hmm. this is what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have all the documentation in line with
what we need,
the HR rules and regulations that prevent us for litigation?
There are what they call, I think it's PNP.
Yeah, performance improvement.
Yeah, or PIP, PIP, where you put an employee into a PIP program and it identifies for them why they're in there. They're deficient in these areas. And then it recommends in there what, or not recommends, it essentially tells them what is required for improvement. It also tells them what's gonna happen if improvement is not forthcoming. And
And how, I believe they that don't, we have they don't, a PIP program.
Yeah, they don't terminate. They don't terminate until that program is complete.
Until all the files are necessary and the HR is fattened up and mm-hmm. compliance, then you
right.
can go. But one of the things that I want to make sure is when manager are deciding to terminate, they have the right verbiage that they're using in termination and discipline, because that's when you get sued. You know, like that's when you say the wrong thing, you get sued from that. So
yeah.
they
yeah.
manager needs that kind of training as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be one of the reasons that you would have in a termination process, you would have an HR person in a room, so that we do it in a standard way.
I'll call and double check, because it's not specifically written into
yeah.
this proposal, but I will make sure that I have documentation that this facilitate, participate in virtual employee counseling and termination meetings as necessary.
And that's, they say they do it, so, and,
yeah.
and my condition would be that I think it's good that they're, if we're going to terminate somebody, we don't do it a lot.
We don't do it a lot. We don't hire a lot of people.
Yeah. So
which
when
is
we
the
do
goal.
Do it, when we do it, it would be good if someone's in the room. That's
yes, sir.
One more thing. They, in the proposal, they only mention employee handbook. Can you verify that? They're also updating our HR menu, which is the most important
yes.
thing.
Yes. Okay. And I called back and verified that in the employee handbook, that's where they'll scoop up all our policies, review them, and put them in the handbook.
In the handbook.
Right, but
let
me make sure that
HR menu is a different animal, too. It's
yeah.
two different handbooks.
And, yep,
and I have experienced before that when we hire these companies, they will update our HR menu, and then with all the current legislation, but when you get down to it, they will say, oh, this part, we're not responsible. You have to get outside counsel to come back with it. So
okay.
that I'm, we want to kind of get them into the engagement letter to say that what exactly are you responsible and liable for? Because if one of the update in HR is not up to date, then we're being sued for that. Then who's liable? Because they should be liable, right? HR to go should be liable for updating all the rules and regulations and teach us all the new legislation.
Agreed.
So if I want to know who's liable if in case anything happened, you know. I got that a lot in the past. When we get down to certain things, they go, oh, this is not covered in our contract and we're not liable for it. You need to get a second opinion from your legal counsel. It's like, okay.
Cecilia, I want to thank you because you always bring information. In how long have you been here? 3 weeks? A month? You always bring information
yeah.
To us that is very valuable and very useful, and information that we have.
Yeah, I always sit in distress company.
And Cecilia went on all the interviews with these companies because we spoke to all of them and got a presentation from all of them and asked really great, insightful questions, and has been my guide, my shoulder angel.
I have a question, though. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
When I read this, the only thing I didn't see, how does the benefits portion of the onboarding tie into this? Do they have experience with PERS?
She said they did. I'll have her.
Okay.
They did say that they have lots of governmental client, and this proposal didn't mention union, but they said they have union. You might want to have them
specify. Okay.
Okay.
They did say that.
Specify. Yeah.
Right.
For the meeting.
Mm-hmm. The yeah. MOU, all those, they're very experienced with it. So that's why we picked HR to go, and the other one too, also have both union and mm-hmm. The MOU and stuff like that. Benefits,
yep.
though, it's something that really need to be, because we pay for it, we calculate, which really lives in the payroll function.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's important. And there's something between this HR Juco or any HR company that we will be working with. Usually our payroll system is linked to an HR module. We might want to develop that side of the payroll module so that they can hire a person and update that pay rate directly into the payroll system, so Hazel doesn't have to fuss with all the numbers and stuff. We'll have segregation of duties as well. The pay rate is determined by another person that Hazel would not touch that number. She just click a button and process. So those are the things that are
involved. That is pay transparency review and guidance. California pay transparency law is put into effect in 2023. Includes salary surveys, assistance with establishing pay ranges for each role, and review for pay equity.
No, I'm talking more about the system, because when they start doing these work, any company that we pay, they're going to need a place to document all those grievance, and they need their file folder. So if we're only 35 to 40 people, if we can digitally set up our paycheck to have the HR module set up, they can go into that HR module and document all the personal, interaction with performance pay interview with the manager, and all the document will be living in a place that it's only accessible by them. But it's linked, because the module of HR and paycheck are linked, the computer. So they can go in a bigger company, they can go in and say, pay performance is done, and this is the pay rate approved by the manager and them, and then Hazel just click a button and process. They don't read the performance appraisal document, they don't read the pay rates, they know that it's done by them.
It's an accounting transaction.
It's an accounting and HR linked. I'm just saying that the paycheck has that function. We should develop that, because now HR to go, or whoever we decided to go with, they would need a place to document all their personnel file and personal documents, personnel documents. So because they're remote too, it's important to set up that module correctly so that information will flow seamlessly into paycheck.
So okay. Let me see if I understand what I'm asking them. Once we've set up our paychecks that we already, pay for monthly, then there's a place in paychecks that's an HR module that's mm-hmm. already existing. Right. And we want them to have access to that HR module component of it so that they can update whatever Everybody. They need to put in and and have them do that automatically.
Right.
Or, what will the extra cost be for that? Or is that already included in this cost? Or,
So, for example, if HR module usually has a pay performance calendar, so if your higher day is May, the system automatically remind the manager and HR to say, review this person starting March. This is your paperwork. And then the system will track that, everyone here has been performance review, and then HR will go in and say, we decided that you're going to get 6.5% in the system, and it's approved by you or the manager. Then when Hazel process payroll, it's already in there. She just needs to pull the trigger to say process payroll.
Right.
So everything, because they're remote, it's important to have that function set up for them, because they did ask in our interview that I did ask, where's your file going to be? Because it's personnel file. They said it won't be on our network. It'll be on your network. You need to find a place for us to, get in. So I think the best thing is to use our computer, our digital system, to manage that. And they should know how to do it. Paycheck is very common
right.
use.
I got it.
Okay.
I'll have you there with me when we talk to Megan too, Cecilia.
Okay. So just a couple of observations and comments. I think that when people look at the district from the outside, they see a handful of people here in the office and the board, et cetera. But they don't recognize or don't, on a regular basis, realize we've got a whole utility staff. We have a whole
security.
I'm sorry. Pardon me?
Security?
Security. That's where I was going. I'm on too many committees. So we have, as you said, 31, 35 actual people that were responsible for knowing and understanding the HR rules. I don't know how we've done this without it for this long. We've not had an official HR department or connection to a professional HR agency. And I think the district has paid the dues for that. I think we need to, this guidance and this operation connected with the people here, the staff here, and how this can all work out is absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we can possibly go forward without this. Yeah. There have been so many situations and instances that have come and gone, and sometimes without even the knowledge by the board of what happened. Mm-hmm. And so I want to emphasize the importance of doing this. I also want to make sure that when we talk about this at the board meeting, that it's as specific as we've talked about it here, and that the board, as well as other people who are involved in this, need to read this and understand what we're going to be able to accomplish, because we have this agency working with us, consultant.
So, again, I'd like to do this for 1 year, the $3,300,
right.
and then hopefully pop down, take the training wheels off, and pop down to the $1,900 a month range after the first year.
Deal with year one, mm-hmm. and
okay.
make sure everybody understands that we have an option for year two to go down or not go down.
Okay.
The other thing I think you should start out doing, you can re-listen to what we just are saying on the recording and come up with, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the two that we have not selected,
right.
other than to say they offer a different strategy, and that strategy is paying by the hour, and
it's not compatible with what we need.
And it's not consistent with what we need to do immediately to get ourselves in shape. And then highlight all of the things that they would do and all the interfaces they would have with the company, and then suggest that the personnel committee has recommended that you, Amelia, administer the contract with the triggers in it that we pass it to a higher level. And you need to come up with the buzzwords of what the higher level triggers are. You know, obviously one is complaints broken down into harassment, sexual harassment, workplace
environment,
gender violations. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever those personnel words are, that when those things occur, it immediately goes up a notch. In the interim, you know, to the general manager or leader to be named later, or to in the absence of a leader to be named later, in the short term to the president. Somebody knows.
And then our company automatically immediately knows, so that they can give us guidance moving forward.
Right.
And then would I also be doing the onboarding and offboarding?
I think if you do it twice a month, and like you said, we're probably going to do it four times a year. Six times a year. I don't know.
Right now, we just need to get people. In
yeah,
place.
I think
qualified people.
I think yes, you would. You know, you would be in the meeting,
mm-hmm.
but they do the onboarding. I mean, if you're in a larger company, they have a personnel eight personnel bodies.
And they have their own HR.
And
that's
they have
how,
one person
that
does the onboarding.
Right.
When I worked at the mortgage company, they did it twice a month. It was a whole day thing. Yeah.
And that would include, depending on what that employee is going to do, would be the issuance of the hardware and the policies that accompany the hardware for a laptop, an iPad, a cell phone, a security device, a fob to open the door, or a key to open the door, whatever they get from us, okay, that they need to perform their duties. We issue it on the day they start. We load it with the appropriate passwords, do whatever has to happen, and we have a record of what they got, and we have a record that they've received the policies that we have that are, you know, you can't call your mother on your cell phone or whatever.
It's mentioned here, new board onboarding assistant and collaboration part of the service.
Yeah, so you know, it would get that specific.
Mm-hmm.
There, a lot of companies will give you, I mean, as elaborate as you want to make it, when we have nothing else to do, you might have an introductory video. I mean, hey, we've been in business since 1984, and right. Here's what we do, and we have three reservoirs, and we have a big $14 million water plant. Whatever you want to tell them, we got 3,000 customers and 6,000 people. You know,
yeah.
It'd be nice to understand where you work and what the role of the CSD
absolutely.
Is in that.
And the board. Yesterday, when we were processing payroll, because of the July 4th, the security officer. They are supposed to work on July 4th. And at the same time, the question come up, that person, a particular person asked for a vacation leave on July 4th, and they're supposed to work. On top of that, they are supposed to get vacation time, 8 hours. If they work that day, they also get, you know, 4 hours working. So those will be the very key question that HR to go should investigate, should we do that? Or should we just make that person, should we pay on top of the holiday? You know, so, you know, and like IT department has, I used to be in medical, like if you are on call, you're on training mode as a doctor, or you're working, they all pay different rates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that we don't know, but it doesn't make sense to pay on top of holiday that you have to work, but I don't know, but maybe that's the reason.
So that's the kind of guidance I would hope we would be able to get.
Yeah.
There are general situations, and then there are specific situations. And
right.
This is one of those, to me anyways, a specific situation that we have here that we have not figured out yet or worked out yet.
We have two sets. We have stuff that, in that sense, I would hope that all of that would be described in a union contract.
Mm-hmm.
But right. You know, we have two sets of rules. We have an unrepresented and a
representative
set.
Right.
And depending on who the employee is, they should get something that identifies it.
But usually what happens is the paycheck system processing payroll should already be set up properly to say, I'm on call, let's pay this rate, I'm
right.
on this.
Right.
And then there should be filter in there that person cannot be paid holiday plus the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All those filter inside the IT system and paycheck should have already been set up nicely by HR2Go.
Right.
And then the payroll processing, we're sitting here, should we not? But that person has vacation, you know, requested, what should we do, you know? So. Those are the things that are key. I just came in from a school, too. They have all these coaches that work weekend because they won a game.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, is that OT or not OT? Because that person gets paid as an exempt person. So there must be rule regarding that do we pay overtime for these, you know? There's a lot of question that they need to be in charge of telling us what to do.
Are we tangled up? California law is explicit on exempt and non-exempt and mm-hmm. who does what and what they get.
Okay.
Does that cross over to the public world? Are we still subject to
those
rules?
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, so I'm a little confused why we would want a full-time person to just do payroll.
That was my understanding of what we were going to look at. There's no, nobody's made any decisions.
Okay,
it was
right.
just a suggestion when we were looking at how we wanted to do some restructuring mm-hmm. within the district. And
yeah, and I think what it gives us the opportunity to do is as paychecks modules are turned on and paychecks is clear about what it is we do and we don't do, if the payroll process the human interface with paychecks becomes less of an issue with that person reporting and accounting. There's flexibility. That person doesn't just have to do the payroll.
And that,
yeah, that she doesn't only do payroll.
Yeah, so they, well, they, yeah, they can do other things.
So there's enough. She has enough work to do to
currently there is.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, but she's doing onboarding too.
She's doing onboarding.
That will be going away.
Yeah.
I plan to sit down with her to go through what she does. But one of the very important thing is benefit management. She makes all the payment, calculate, you know, all the report that whoever gets the pension and how much is it, and submit it correctly. And there are other stuff that I haven't, you know, really sit down with her, but I want to kind of get a full inventory of what she does and make sure that, you know, I know what she's doing, you know. So
frankly, these people were added to our to the finance department, and they were doing work that my recollection is not that it was ever explained exactly what their job descriptions were, why they were doing it, why they were hired, etc. And so I think this is a perfect example of, first of all, we need to give whoever is doing this a job description, and that's what we're going to be working on with our HR to go, if that's the company we choose. Mm-hmm. So, again, the importance of getting this going and doing it as soon as possible, and pulling together all of the things that we have questions about. And as a board member, in a different, slightly mm-hmm. different role or an additional role, doing a lot of this work, I am seeing things that I never saw before, and as a board, become dependent on the people we hire to manage things, and this is just years of not having complete information, mm-hmm. And regular information.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as the payroll person is concerned, my statement that it would be full time, that was only based on what I currently understood about what was happening with payroll and
mm-hmm.
HR.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, like we're going to do with a whole lot of folks, we need to have a job description. And
yeah.
It needs to be clear. And if it's a job description that
we don't have it? We don't have a job description for it?
Well, we do. We totally do.
Well, it doesn't sound like we have a job description that would apply to the person's job going forward.
Mm. Right. We need to update
the current. If
they're going to
do HR
job description,
and they're going to just do payroll, then we have to adjust the job description.
Mm.
Right? Am I right?
Well, everybody's,
I can't tell you
everybody's,
off the top of my head
everybody's job description should be
updated
relative to what they do now, not what they did even 5 years ago when we hired.
I get that. But that's what we're going to be doing with this HR company.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about whether we need a full-time or a part-time, we need to gather some information about what the job description is going to be.
Yeah.
Is there just staying with this benefits issue for a second, do employees now have anything that explains to them, we don't make these rules, but is there something that PERS gives them or gives us that says this is the deal?
I know that when I was onboarded, I received the PERS PEPRA handbook that explained how PERS worked. Have the employees that came on after me received that?
Well,
I can get a onboarding packet from them to see, you know, let you show
from
you know,
the
legacy.
PERS people.
No,
from
our
HR. From
like
Hazel.
When we onboard some, there must be a packet. I can
yeah,
get that.
Yeah, there must be a sample of something.
Yeah, there must be something.
Yeah.
Let's take a look.
Okay,
at that.
Okay.
And the other thing that we may or may not have written down or defined is the differences in that package for unrepresented versus represented? Like, in my head, the one that is that the 5-year unrepresented that gets you family benefits or whatever.
And it's not even 5 years. The way I understand that is if I would have come on here with 5 previous years' experience with
you're
the state and
there.
In PERS, one day here and I get the gold star. I, you know, personally, this is my first PERS job, so I had to work those 5 years to be vested in PERS. But once you're vested in PERS at 5 years, and I'm not a lawyer, but what I have heard from other employees in the district is that they only have to work here for one day, and they're
vested.
They only have to work here for one day, and they, as an unrepresented employee, will receive that benefit.
Okay. Well,
is that true or false? I don't
yeah,
know.
I'm not debating what the policy is. I just want to make sure that it's consistent and everybody thinks it's the same thing.
Right.
And that when
right.
when you show up, when you come right. through the door the first time, that you get it, and you understand. And there is, and I'm sure they're doing this. There is something conditional that where you acknowledge that you've gotten all of this stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it goes in your file.
So I'll reach out to CalPERS. And get the skinny, because we, the district, have our own agreement with CalPERS and how our employees' retirement
mm-hmm.
will look.
Okay, yeah,
and
we.
So I would need that from CalPERS.
Would be handy to know that.
yeah, and not shrouded in mystery.
And not being dependent on the person who we're working with tells us. Their understanding of it. We have to have our own understanding.
Right. No. We have to have. CalPERS understanding.
Right, exactly.
right? So it's not just rumor and hearsay.
Yeah, and the other thing that when as I've been working with it and I got through it is pay for performance and the bonus structure.
Oh boy.
And the ranges in salary and I'm not sure. First of all, we need to understand going forward.
Yeah,
what do we have to, as it relates to pay for performance and ranges mm-hmm. particularly, what does the law say we have to do?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, like, and I kind of caught it in what you were talking about there, is there something that mandates that we have ranges? And is there something in that law that says we have to have minimums
mm-hmm.
based on this,
minimums,
and if we have the minimums, okay, which is less of an issue for me, I want to know if we have to have a maximum or if we have to have a midpoint, because what does it mean when we consistently hire people at the higher end of the range? Okay, now what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now it's a year later and they're at the maximum of the range. What do we do? What can we do? What do we do? What does the law say we're supposed to do? And the other part of that I find, I don't know whether I find, it's not confusing, but I don't know what the right word is if I'm rewarding you with additional money, i.e. bonus, on an annual basis, based on your rating from your performance, then I'm really giving you, I'm not saying it's bad,
mm-hmm.
I'm really giving you 2 raises.
Right.
Okay, I don't want to give you 2 raises. I want to give you, and I'm not sure what I want to do, but what I would prefer to do is to give you an increase based on your performance
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and give you a bonus for things that are over and above that performance, which first and foremost would mean reaching a set of predetermined goals.
Right.
And rewarding you for other things that you have done annually that are above and beyond what your job description says you have to do. If you are, and I'll use it as an example, if if you all of a sudden are at a higher level, you know, a director that is engaged in building a $15 million water plant.
There should be
some goals associated with that that say, you know, you're going to be rewarded if it costs 15, and or you're going to be even more significantly rewarded if it costs 13. But you're not going to be rewarded if it costs 18. Okay, so it's not goal based, and when you set up a bonus mm-hmm. plan, mm-hmm. and I was in one for years at CBS. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the beginning of the year, and it's cumbersome and time consuming. You're sitting down with your manager, and you're identifying what those goals are, and those goals are set into that plan, and then at the end of the year, you're paid against your performance on those goals. Mm-hmm. On a one-time basis, has nothing to do with your salary. That's a different issue.
And
but right now, I got the 6.5, so that means I get 6.5 here or 4.5 here, and I automatically get a bonus, which is here. But
mm-hmm. okay. there's a terminology, perhaps there's another way to describe it, but when you talk about exempt employees on salary. My experience is that you are getting a salary and you work in that salary or on that salary to do the job for however many hours it takes to do the job, and that any bonuses, as you were saying, or pay raises would be dependent on the job that you're being asked to do and whether or not you are on track or meeting the expectations. Mm-hmm. And so when you start at the highest level or even close to the highest level, and what happens after that is it pay for performance, you know, and so I think all of this really is something that we could use a lot of guidance on.
Mm-hmm. What are the types of bonus plan, incentive plan?
Right.
Like I work for a company that it's like a Home Depot, but they mm-hmm. have 76 locations. Each of the manager who manage that store, mm-hmm. if your profit margin is this, you get this raise. If your sales attain to this goal, then you know you get this raise. You know, so all those things are tied. And those are the type of things that you want to set milestone for achievement, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's difficult here because it gets easier when you work in that context. And I worked, for a long time.
Cut and dry.
Yeah, if you're gonna cut expenses, mm-hmm. you can. It's easy to measure, and you can be rewarded. If you're going to increase profits, i.e., you're going to increase sales, that you know. Maybe even combined with reducing the expenses.
Right.
You can be rewarded for that, and it's easy to even set levels within the goals.
So
you know, if you do
10%,
you're going to get X. If you do 5%, you're going
to
get X.
I do have to interrupt and say we have 7 minutes until our next meeting. I love this topic. It's very informative. But we did have another topic on the agenda this morning.
Okay.
And what I was going to say was mm-hmm. that if we feel comfortable with the degree of discussion that we've had regarding this particular agenda item, and that we're ready to, with some additional information, that we're ready to take this to the board for action.
Yeah.
Recommending that $3,300
level. And we'll leave that to you two to, based on, you can listen to the recording or do whatever you want to do, to bring us something that encapsulates what we said, you know, that doesn't take this much time. You know,
okay.
Otherwise, we will be here at that meeting.
Forever.
Okay.
Item number 4. This is my item, and I brought it to personnel because I need guidance in the security department and committee. what we've discovered through question asking and trying to for me personally to understand exactly how we're working in security, what has come to my attention, and Amelia has certainly helped me figure this out, and Cecilia also, trying to address the security needs, staffing and scheduling needs, as it relates to the budget. And what's happened is that it has come up with job descriptions starting in 2011, I believe, various and assorted different job descriptions that the board has acted on and passed. But there's a real disconnect between what all of that was done and what is actually happening right now. And I feel there's a problem with CSO and patrol officer. There's two different job descriptions. We need to engage as soon as possible,
right,
this HR2Go company to help us figure out what's going on in that situation. Job descriptions will need to be rewritten, not major rewrites, but there needs to be a collation, a pulling together of exactly what it is that we're doing. And part of the problem with this most recent change from patrol officer to community service officer is that it was not presented to the union. And so we're basic, right? Am I right, Amelia?
It was presented to the union. It just hasn't been agreed to
a letter of, what do they call it?
A side letter. They need
a side letter, right. And it was never signed.
I'll bring the side letter to the board. The board will approve it.
So at this...
Yeah, that's what you want me to do.
So at this point, in trying to pull together a job description or a functioning, operational security department, we've got to do this right away because there are so many questions that are hanging out there. Mm-hmm. So that was why I brought this to personnel, because I want to make sure that on both levels, mm-hmm. In the security committee and in the personnel committee, that we are dealing with what's going on in security.
Mm-hmm. If this is going up there, figure out how you want to do this, because we have to discuss. The board has to discuss the tools of the trade as they relate to insurance, and we have handcuffs, we have mace,
right.
We have batons, and
currently,
we have a weapon.
Right.
They're not doing some of these, and some of
most
these
of
they
them.
Are.
Right.
And Amelia is confirming based on the initial response we had when we say to GSRMA, are we covered for this? Are we covered for that? And we get, huh?
Okay.
Well,
good question.
And there are things to remember about this stuff. You carry a baton, you have to have a license. You
yep.
carry a gun, you have to have certain...
you have to have your guard card.
You have to be a certain age, you have to do all that
right.
stuff. And so when you start talking about job descriptions and changing job descriptions mm-hmm. and changing titles, and there's no reference or input at all about what this means on a day-to-day basis
right.
to the security officers, gate and patrol,
mm-hmm.
That's why I'm as I've gotten involved in all of this stuff, these are all the things that are coming up, and it is related to job descriptions, and it's related to money.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the last security meeting, which I will try to sum up and have prepared for the board meeting, it feels like this is not an emergency, but it's something that we need to act on ASAP. Because I don't know what to tell Brandon. And I don't know, how quickly we can do this, but I'd like to do it as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. So John has instructed me to add a board item to the agenda next week concerning the equipment carried by security patrol officers. So that's on there. That'll open up the discussion. I'll bring what they're currently carrying. I won't have an answer back from GSRMA about the insurance portion.
Yeah, what's concerning is, and I don't know if it exists here in writing,
and going back more than 20 years when Suzanne was here, I asked that question repeatedly about our coverage and whether it was, understanding that there are only two CSDs in the entire state that have a security department.
Right.
Okay. To my knowledge, there are no other CSDs that had one at the time, anyway, that was armed. And I asked for clarification from GSRMA as to what our liability coverage was, understanding that, a la Minneapolis, okay, if someone tells me we have $1 million worth of coverage, well, that gets you through the first day.
Okay,
it's the other $65 million that I'm kind of worried about. I really want clarification from them in writing.
I do too.
And I want to drill it down. I mean, I never asked it in the context of anything beyond the weapon.
So,
but if there's applicability to these other tools,
then I want to
understand those. Yeah.
And one other point in the course of discussion at the security meeting, I asked Brandon what they have now, and he said nothing. And we also explored the body cams, and that came up. We have body cams somewhere. They are not using them. They have not been given to them, or that has.
And I was not aware that had gone away.
They weren't wearing body cams.
To replace the body cams and get us back on that program, and to get me quotes to hold that data for a certain amount of time.
In the discussion, the only thing I said to Brandon or that we talked about was that perhaps we should, for the time being, give the cufflinks and the non-licensed...
Mace has to be licensed, too.
Mace has to be licensed. Okay, so the only thing
But I'm sure they all have that, because that was all one of the...
Well, we don't know about part-time employees, and we don't know about...
We don't have any part-time patrol employees.
I know that, but the way this CSO description was written was extremely big, and most of it didn't apply to this district. I want to know what I can tell him.
Yeah, no, I agree. And and extending that, are we dealing with are we going to formally deal with the part-time gate people that were hired that have to this point had no hours?
Or not?
Are we in the process?
That's waiting for HR to go to get their official opinion on that.
Okay.
Or whatever HR company needs to decide.
All right.
And that again relates to job descriptions, but it also relates to budget. And like I said, and this will be my last comment, as important as the security department is and the gate and patrol officers are to all of us, we are in a vacuum right now. And so that has to be fixed.
Okay. So then I won't take these job descriptions to the board. I'll just take that discussion and action item about the equipment that the patrol officers carry.
Okay.
What should we be doing about equipment, given that we are in a limbo state right now?
Okay. And I'll tell Ryan over at GSRMA that I need the information.
Yeah, and we need
by
to
next
know.
Tuesday, so he can just work and get it. Maybe.
Yeah, and right? if we are covered for each of these things,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to know what that contribution to the premium is.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not, then I want to know something. And because I would allocate that to the budget
to the department
to that particular department. Yeah. Okay.
Can I tell Brandon that anything that needs a license, we can't give that out right now? That can't be used? In other words, a baton, mace, so anything that needs a license?
Well, he should understand at this point, individual by individual, what licenses they have.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know beyond that, but yeah, if we don't know that now, then that's the first thing we need to know. If they're running around without one and they have the thing,
have anything right now, according to what he said.
Oh, so, in other words, they're not carrying.
They're not carrying anything, and
right.
So he wanted to know if there's something they can have, and that's also how we got into the body cam discussion. So what I'm hearing is that if it's something that requires a license, if they don't have the license, then they can't carry it. Is that is that the right way to describe it?
So does it mean that in the future we want to hire people with a license?
No, it means that we need to have a job description and figure out what our patrol officers are going to carry, and then they have
exactly.
to get the license.
I say if we can contact our insurance company and see what their advice, because I'm sure they insure other security
no, they
company.
Don't.
They don't.
they insure police departments.
Oh, they police departments, yes. Okay, but
right, which brings
but
us back to the question, what are our LAFCO authorities? I know we don't have the authority to arrest and detain anybody
right.
with LAFCO.
The other thing, too, when GSRMA insures a police department who carry all this stuff
right.
and more, okay, in terms of you know, an upgrade from a holstered weapon, they already assume that all of the licensing and, more importantly, the training
right.
that goes with it, okay, they're insuring a guy that went through a police academy.
Right.
Okay, so their evaluation of that, their actuarial input to that cost is really different than ours. So
it has to completely.
Yeah. So
yeah,
get all that information from them.
Observe and protect. I mean, observe and report.
Report.
That's the only thing that they're charged to do with to
okay.
do this job description. Okay.
It's 10:07.
It's 10:07, and we have another meeting, so...
Director's comments?
No.
Any director's comment? We've all commented.
Okay.
All right. So the meeting is now adjourned. It's 10:07.
10:07. Thank you very much.